My name is Jenny Flanagan. I'm the Executive Director of Colorado Common Cause, and we are really honored to be able to partner with the Secretary of State today on a forum to talk about the upcoming primary election. As you all know, this primary is the first primary under a new hybrid model of how we run primary elections in Colorado, coming out of House Bill 2009-1015, which lays out service centers and some new concepts. And today we really wanted to come together and hear from a sampling of county clerks to start off, but also we have some county clerks in the room. We also have civic engagement and political folks who can offer their insights and ask some questions and just start to dialogue about how this new model is going to work and impact our voters, hopefully for the better, and really assist in the smooth transition of our elections. Before we get started, I'll just talk a little bit about our work. Common Cause helps to run a nonpartisan voter protection program called Just Vote Colorado Election Protection. We've been in place since 2004 and monitor the elections and try to work collaboratively with our election managers and administrators and the community, trying to bridge some of those gaps and make sure we have as effective as communication as possible. And some of our steering committee members are here. We work with the Latina Initiative, the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People, the Colorado League of Women Voters, the Colorado Lawyers Committee, and nationally the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law. So we're just thrilled to be here. our plan for the day, we're going to start off and hear from the Secretary and then from our panelists, and then we'll open it up for discussion with the folks in the room. There are microphones that we'll be recording online. I don't think you can hear me in the room on a mic, so hopefully we'll just speak loudly enough in the room that we can hear one another. There is a mic up here if you have questions when we get to that portion, and we do want to hear from all of you, and I'm really glad that you can be here today. For folks who are listening online, hopefully that's working. You can also email in your questions to colorado@commoncause.org, and we'll be able to take your questions online. So without further ado, Secretary Buescher, thank you so
much.
Thank
you, Jenny. And I appreciate, Jenny, your work on pulling this together and hosting this, and thanks to all the folks that are here in attendance. This is a terrific turnout, and I'm very, very pleased. I want to just spend a very few minutes and talk kind of about the big picture, because it is rather remarkable to see how far elections have come in approximately 10 to 12 years. If you go back a dozen years, we were still dealing with punch card systems, levers, a lot of manual work. And then after the 2000 election, there was HAVA, and there was a transition to a lot of DREs. And now Colorado seems to be moving increasingly to a mail-out ballot state. And that hasn't happened without an awful lot of hard work by the clerks particularly. And there's a lot of clerks here, and I just want to commend you for your hard work in adapting to multiple systems and being able to give the voters the incredible amount of choice that we've given them. It seems to me that they're making the choice that they prefer mail ballots. We'll see where that goes. So that's the first thing I wanted to do, is just commend everyone for the work on that. Secondly, there's another innovation that is out there that I think is important to mention today, because it ties in, and that is the online voter registration tool that went up on April 1st. Now, we've had a little glitch, and I want to talk about that glitch for a second, but it is a relatively insignificant glitch. It affects, we think, about 1% of everyone who tries to use it. But that tool is an extraordinary tool to make it easier for folks to register, to change their registration, to update their address, or to opt for permanent mail ballot status. And that website is www.govotecolorado.com. And I'm encouraging everyone I can to use that, and I'm hoping that the clerks around the state are putting a link on their websites to that, so that we can make increasing use of it. The little glitch we had involves situations whose driver license data changed from the last time that we interfaced with DOR. And that can happen because of a speeding ticket or they're notifying the Department of Revenue that there's a change to their status. And the records that we're comparing to in this system aren't the same as what DOR has. Again, it's a timing issue. We think we've got a fix for it. But a very few people have been impacted. Regretfully, there's been a little bit too much publicity about this, and I probably don't help by talking about it, but it is a problem. We understand it, and we're getting it fixed. GoVoteColorado.com. I'm encouraging everyone to use it if you're dealing with folks that are registering or changing their registration. I'm delighted we've got the panel here today. And, Jenny, I'll turn it back to you, and I'm just delighted to be here.
Thank you so much. Okay, panel, it is your turn. We've sort of set the stage by inviting each of the panelists to consider a couple of questions, but obviously invite them to add their own thoughts as well. And some of the questions we started off that I emailed to each of you is to talk about how is this election different than previous primary or vote-by-mail elections that you may have held? What were some of your processes within your county in determining how many and where to place the service centers? And what kind of education and outreach are you doing that may be new or different, and whether or not it's targeted to any particular communities like voters with disabilities or Spanish language voters, that type of education? So I was thinking I'll just go down the line unless somebody wants to go first. So before you get going, if you could just reintroduce yourself, and just for folks listening, we have Denver, Arapahoe, Jefferson, and Mesa County at our panel, but again, we've got lots of other folks represented in the room. So introduce yourself, let us know your current position, and how long you've been working in elections management. Thank you.
I'm Michael Scarpello. I'm Director of Elections for the City and County of Denver. I've been in here in Colorado since August of 2007, and I've been in elections management since 2000.
I think you could just go right ahead, as each one speaks, they can introduce themselves.
Okay, great. I'm here speaking on behalf of Clerk and Recorder Stephanie O'Malley. Stephanie wanted to be here today, but unfortunately she had another obligation. She has to state of the city addressed by the mayor just down the road. So I'm speaking in her behalf, and they've told me I have 7 or 8 minutes, and I don't know that I've ever spoke 7 or 8 minutes in my entire life, so I'll try to keep it short. I mentioned that we came into office in 2007, and that was after an election debacle in Denver. And we know that there was a lot of turmoil going on in 2008, and there was a lot of talk about mail ballot elections at the time. And the City and County of Denver and Stephanie O'Malley and myself, we took a position against mail ballot elections. And frankly, at the time, we didn't think the state was ready. We thought there was a lot of work to do before a mail ballot election could take place. Legislation was introduced in 2009 to move towards a mail ballot primary. We gave a lot of input on what should be included in that legislation, and our advice was taken in many ways, and we were pretty happy with what came out of that House Bill 1015. It was passed this year. We considered whether or not we wanted to do a mail ballot, and our primary driver for us was cost in making a decision. Cost was a big deal to us. The City and County of Denver has about $100 million deficit right now, so every penny that we can save is very important to not only us but to the citizens of Denver. By conducting a primary mail ballot election, we think we can save about $325,000. So that was one of the major factors. Another thing that really drove our decision was an improved relationship with the post office. We had lots of issues with the post office accurately and timely delivering our ballots. We've met with them countless times. put together standard agreements with them to hold their feet to the fire, and they've been very cooperative with us, so we've made a lot of progress there. In addition to that, our own address library, the library that we use to keep, to identify a voter as, you know, giving them their address when they submit their registration, we verify that it's an accurate address. And our address library, through the course of 50, 75 years, was a mess. And we've worked very hard to clean that up. So we felt more comfortable having a mail ballot election after we cleaned that address library up. And in fact, we're still in the process of doing that. And then finally, and most importantly, a new product for us, a new service to the voter we call Ballot Trace. This is a brand new service that we developed ourselves in conjunction with a local vendor called i3 Logics. And what Ballot Trace does, we call it a Ballot Trace. Trace is an acronym for Tracking, Reporting, and Communications Engine. And what it gives us the ability to do is to follow a ballot from the time it leaves our printer to the post office, to the local postal carrier, to your home, and then back again. And Ballot Trace has given us the ability for us, you know, to track so that we know, you know, in fact, we piloted this last November and then again in a May special election. So if we sent, you know, 350,000 ballots to the post office and our scans read that only 330,000 have gotten out, we know that there's a problem and there's pallets of ballots sitting at the post office. And in fact, this did happen in last November. So we have that ability to track those ballots now through the postal system. Not only for us, but for the voter. A voter can go to our website, sign up, and they can find out where their ballot's at through text messages. So on your phone, you can get a message that says, "I've you know, your ballot's been printed today," or "your ballot has been shipped to the post office," or "your ballot is being delivered to your home today," etc. So Ballot Trace is new, it's cutting edge, it's first in the country. And, you know, we're a little nervous about it, but we feel very optimistic, and we think it's the wave of the future for the entire country, frankly. So that along with the other improvements that we've made, we're very confident that a mail ballot election is doable. So thus, we held a public hearing. We made our case to our voters. We got positive feedback, and we decided to conduct this year's election as a mail ballot election. The election is going to be, you know, for Democrats, Republicans, and Libertarians in Denver. There will be the ballots will only go to those parties. It will not go to unaffiliated voters. We did have a extraterrestrial commission piece that was going to go to unaffiliated voters, an ordinance.
Ballot question,
correct. Once again, to try to save money, we pulled that and we moved it to the general election. We're going to save about $100,000 that way. So between that and conducting a mail ballot election, you know, well over $400,000 in savings. Return of ballots, you know, so ballots will go out by mail. Return of ballots can be returned by postage. That would be 61 cents postage, or people can return them to service centers. Previously, I think in 2006, there were about 6 or 7 service centers in Denver. And back in 2008, as well as this year, we wanted to be very aggressive with service centers. I think the legislation would require Denver to have about 4.5 or basically 5 service centers. And we've decided to have 13. And what we're going to do is have one in every city council district, as well as 2 in one particular city council district that's very large geographically, and then another one at our home location downtown because of just the mass, you know, the large number of people in the downtown area. Of course, all the standard services will be offered. One thing that varies from the legislation, what we're going to do, instead of being open the required 8 days for a service center, we're going to be open for 15 days. I think the legislation calls for 15 days of drop-off or 14 days of drop-off and 8 days of service center. We just felt for our customers that having the service centers and the drop-offs open for the whole length of time would be better. It's a little bit more expensive, but we want to provide that service at least for this year. and see how it works out and measure whether or not that's successful or not. And I think that's about it.
Is that all you're looking for at this point?
I think it's a great place to start. And then we can come back as other questions come up. Arapahoe.
Okay. Thank you, Jenny, and thank you, Secretary Buescher. I am Nancy Doty, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder. I was elected in a recall election in February of 2004 and have been working elections ever since. So I would this afternoon like to, and first of all, thank you for having us, and I will go over the issues that you mentioned in your email to us that were suggestions for us to address. And first of all is the difference in our primary election this year versus other years. This year is the first time that we're allowed to have a vote-by-mail election as a primary, and so we are doing that. In other years, we've had polling site elections, and there's a huge difference. We have 372 precincts and about 200 polling locations if we have a polling site election. And as Mike mentioned, cost is a huge issue for that. In 2006, for instance, the costs have gone up continuously. In 2006, for a polling site election or a general election, the cost was $620,000. In 2008, it was $1.3 million. So it's gone up considerably. And our 2009, which was an all-mail ballot election in Arapahoe County, the cost was $466,000. So it's a huge difference. So that's one factor, because I always like to watch out for the taxpayers' dollars. Secondly, our voters, this is the preferred method. In 2008, in the primary election, 92% of our voters voted by mail anyway. So a very small percentage went to the polling site. So we had to set up all these polling sites, and very few voters went for it. The other thing I did was solicit comments from the voters themselves to see what they preferred. Do they want a polling site election for the primary, or do they want a mail ballot election? I had only one comment from a voter who wanted a polling site election, and the reason was because it gives people an option. So it's expensive to do that, to give people that option. And I think we're seeing the trend. 68% of our voters prefer to vote by mail right now. And after the primary election, we will send out letters to the people who have not yet signed up to be permanent mail-in voters to see if we can get more on board with that, because it is the wave of the future. Then the second issue that we were to look at or talk about was the number of service centers. We have 4 service centers for Arapahoe County and 14 drop-off locations. Those service centers are part of the 14 drop-off locations. So they're, all the drop-off locations are at our municipal clerk's offices, so they're throughout the entire county. Our service centers are located at our motor vehicle offices, and our motor vehicle offices are located throughout the county. We have one in Byers, which is on the eastern side of Arapahoe County. Arapahoe County is long and narrow, 10 miles high and 70 miles long. So the people out in the eastern part of the county have the Byers office, where they can drop off their ballots or get replacements or change their voter registration and handle all of the issues that service centers do handle. We have another office in Aurora that's located just a few blocks from the city clerk's offices, and it's a heavily populated area, so I expect that to be a busy office, and that will accommodate a lot of our voters. And then we have the southeast office, which is pretty much the center, a central location of our county. It's on Arapahoe and Peoria, so people can go there. Or for those that live closer to the east or the western part of our county, they can go to our administration building, which is where we have another motor vehicle office, but our main election office also. And that handles the Littleton area and the western side of Centennial. And to get this information out about our primary, we've done several things. Of course, we've done press releases, several press releases to let voters know this is going to be a a vote-by-mail election, and it's on our website. We let voters know that, arapahovotes.com. I've gone out and actually done outreach talks to various organizations, political organizations, service organizations, homeowners. So we've gotten the message out that way. And we have reached outreach to the voters with disabilities, and the fact that we've posted on our website that we have audio and visual enhancement on our voting equipment, which is found at our voting centers. And we've done press releases that gives that information for our voters with disabilities. And one other thing we've done is we are enhancing our website. I'm very proud of this. Voters can go on our website and put in their address, and they will be given information about their nearest vote center or their drop-off location, so they can find all that online. So that about wraps it up for us.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Josh, Jefferson County.
Thank you. My name's Josh Liss. I'm the Deputy of Elections for Jefferson County, here on behalf of Pam Anderson, the clerk and recorder. I apologize that Pam is not here today. There's a head cold going around in our office, and if you can believe it, I actually am better off. So I promise not to speak very long, as I may run out of a voice very quickly. But Jefferson County is excited about the prospect of a mail ballot primary this year. We've been conducting the odd year elections in Jefferson County by mail ballot since 1993. It's something our voters are familiar with. It's something our staff is familiar with. And frankly, it's something we're getting pretty good at. And as Secretary Buescher alluded to, it's becoming more and more popular of an option. 73% of Jeffco's active registered voters are signed up as permanent mail-in voters. That's 57% of our total, but 73% of active have signed up for permanent mail-in. I heard a couple people mention the previous primary election in Jefferson County, the 2008 primary election. 93% of the people who cast a ballot in that election cast their ballot by mail. That leaves the other 7% that voted either earlier at a polling place or in person of some form. But in conducting a polling place election, 9 out of 10 people who voted a mail ballot. Cost savings certainly is a consideration. We estimate that by conducting this election by mail, as opposed to a polling place election, we'll be saving anywhere from 40 to 60%. And as the costs of elections go up and our economy tightens, that's one consideration that certainly had to be taken into account. We have one advantage. We're very proud to partner with a local print vendor. Our ballots are in Golden before they're mailed out, and we're able to be on site to quality control check during when the envelopes are sprayed with the voters' information and address. We're there checking to make sure they go to the right place. That's nice. We're there to watch it go to the post office. We also have ballot tracking on our website. Voters can look up their voter information, be able to, in the case of a polling place election, see where their polling place is and find a map to their polling place. In the case of a mail ballot election, they're actually able to see when the ballot was mailed out, when the ballot was received, and when it was processed. And that's something that we've had in our on our website, I believe, since 2007. We are also looking at further innovations in the areas of signature verification on incoming ballots and printing on demand, so that we don't have any waste in terms of paper ballots, pre-printed paper ballots. For this election, Jefferson County has 984 different unique ballot styles. In each of our 5 service centers, that's 984 unique stacks of paper. Ballot on demand has given us the ability to produce those ballots as needed and not pre-print that ballot stock and not waste that paper or that taxpayer money. As I mentioned before, we will have 5 service centers available for this election: Arvada, Evergreen, South Jefferson County, Lakewood, and Golden, at all our motor vehicle branches. And we'll have a total of 11 drop-off sites throughout the county. So those 5 sites I mentioned, as well as the municipal clerk's offices in all the municipalities in Jefferson County.
I'm sorry, it's 11
drop-offs
and 5 service centers?
Yes. And those will all be open starting Monday morning, the 19th. We figure ballots will go out, might as well have services open. So, we're looking forward to this election. I think we're going to see tremendous savings, and I also think we're going to see tremendous participation. I anticipate that we will see more voters participate in the primary election this year who may not normally participate, and that's a good thing. So, with that, I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Janice.
Janice Rich. I'm the Mesa County Clerk. I'm in my 8th year as the County Clerk. Like everyone else, our previous primaries have been held, offering one of 3 methods, which is vote by mail, early voting, or election day voting. So this primary will be the first year that we have utilized the vote by mail for primary election. We have been conducting vote by mail elections in odd numbered years since 1997. The service centers that we've chosen in Mesa County are 2 service centers, one at the old Mesa County Courthouse, which is located right in the downtown part of Grand Junction. That is the location of the Mesa County Elections Office. The other service center will be at the Mesa Mall DMV. For some of you that are not aware, the main DMV office is at a mall in Grand Junction. And our data has shown throughout the years that the Mesa Mall has the most visible office for election activity, second only to the elections office. We will have 5 locations for courtesy box drop locations. However, we chose not to have those as service centers. Those are the other DMV offices, and they're too small to handle anything other than the DMV clerk that sits in there and the customers that come in for those services. The outreach that Mesa County has done each year, and we've done this since 2006, is that we put together a Citizens Election Review Committee of citizens within Mesa County. And they comprise of members from both major political parties, representatives from the disability community, unaffiliated voters, and representatives from the League of Women Voters. And so for 2009, once the legislation passed in August of 2009, I asked the review committee to come together to look at the proposal to present to the county commissioners the possibility of the option of going to vote by mail for the primary election. And we reviewed extensive data, specifically 2008, but we also had data from all the way back to 1990. And once everything was reviewed, the committee unanimously suggested that we make the proposal to the county commissioners. And then, in accordance with statute, we published our notice in the local newspaper. We posted it on the website. We allowed 15 days for public comment. We only received 20 comments throughout the county. 12 of them were in favor of vote by mail for the primary only. So the commissioners were supportive of that. We had a lot of data to back that up. And of course, like all the other counties, the savings was pretty big. We're saving the county $250,000 by holding the primary election as vote by mail. The primary election for 2008, we only had a 24% turnout. Of that turnout, 75% of the voters voted by mail. Now, overall in Mesa County, we don't have as large a percentage of permanent mail-in voters as some of the other counties. We still only have 53% that want to vote by mail. And also in the outreach, we have prepared a brochure about the primary election. We have distributed this to both major political parties. We have it in all of our DMV offices and the recording division. When the commissioners approved the vote by mail, we decided to send out a mailing to all households, not voters, but all households. And it was an informational piece letting them know that the August 10 primary would be held by vote by mail and the November 2nd general election would be held as a vote center. And we broke out that information of what both of those elections would look like. This is just one side of it. On the other side, we did have an application for registration that's approved by the Secretary of State if people had not registered or if they wanted to make a change. So that was one of the outreach that we did. We have a very good working relationship with the media in Mesa County, with both newspapers and also the TV stations. And just this last week alone, they have done two or three news items concerning the primary election. So they've been very helpful to us in getting the word out. And we have had no questions or comments from the Spanish language community for Mesa County, so I can't really speak to that. But I think that's all I have to tell you right now.
Thank you all so much. We're going to go over to the secretary, and then for folks who are interested in asking questions, again, you can email questions to colorado@commoncause.org, and then folks can come up to the podium. I think that would be best because then people who are listening online would be able to hear your questions.
Thank you, Jenny. A couple of things just to comment on. 47 of our counties are doing all mail ballot this year, so most of the counties that looked at this made the decision to do this, and I suspect, as our four panelists told us, cost was the principal driver. 12 counties will be doing polling place elections, and 6 will be doing vote center elections in this primary. I heard a couple of things here that I'd like to go back and emphasize. For Denver, I think the efforts that they put into ballot tracing is going to be very, very important. We've met in this office with i3 Logics and considered doing this on a statewide basis. It would have required an extra appropriation from the General Assembly, and I wasn't prepared to go do that yet. But I'm watching what Denver is doing very, very closely, and I do think that having sophisticated tools both for the county and the voter to trace the ballot is going to be an important component as we go forward. I also think that having the ability to do ballot on demand is going to be an important component. One of the most shocking things for me as I was learning this job was to go to Adams County and to see the wall of ballots that they had printed and not used. When a county has several hundred or more than 1,000 ballot styles and has to be prepared for people who may come in and has to print that many ballots and then realize that 97% of them don't get used, it's distressing on a lot of levels. So I do think ballot on demand is important. And then my last comment is I have been very impressed with the way that the counties are doing outreach to voters, and even more impressed by the way that many counties are exceeding the requirements that were laid out in 10-15. I remember well the discussions as 10-15 went through and the concerns about the mandates contained within 10-15 on number of drop-off places and so forth. And I think it needs to be noted that many, many counties are far exceeding 10-15 on the number of drop-off locations and vote centers. And I think that's because the clerks and the county commissioners understand their counties and realize what's necessary to make this system work. And my last comment is, although the fiscal aspect of this is important, far more important, in my view, is the fact that this seems clearly to increase voter participation. And that's, I think, the goal of all the clerks and this office, and getting more voters to participate in our elections is important, and vote by mail seems clearly to do that. So a lot of good things going on, but a lot of work to do over the next 4 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. And, you know, as we laid out in our invitation for all of you and for the panelists, you know, today is not really a discussion on sort of the merits of vote by mail, although obviously a lot of those issues are factors. But I do have to raise some of, you know, the other perspective, and certainly folks know that Common Cause has, and some of our coalition partners have raised some of the concerns with vote by mail. I think clearly, as the panel has said, vote by mail is very popular. I happen to be that 7% in Jefferson County that tries to get to the polls, and I can usually do that in a primary. But that there are, around the state, a number of voters who do still choose the polling place. And what does that mean? And I think that was part of our drive in this model legislation of having the service center model and making sure that we have that alternative, sort of that backup for that voter who does want to go to the polling place or doesn't get their mail ballot because they may have moved, or any number of other circumstances that you who manage our elections know, because you interface with those voters on a daily basis, and certainly on election day get calls frantically, how can I participate? I never received my ballot. I know you get them because I get them as well. So, you know, that's really what I hope we can talk a little bit more this afternoon, or you know, how do we address some of those concerns? So maybe I'll start with the first question, because I don't see people lining up, although I have encouraged you all to start thinking of your questions. And for the other county clerks who are out there, other county officials, I encourage you as well to talk about how you're approaching the primary, if there are other things that are add value to our discussion. But maybe I'll start off going back to the ballot on demand question, because not every county has that option. So for counties who don't have that, how are you addressing sort of the multiple ballot style issue? Because it is a concern in a vote by mail election, balancing that need to have that opportunity for voters at those service centers.
It's a huge problem, and it's one that we all face. Because on the one hand, try to provide as many service centers as you can fiscally, while still being fiscally responsible. But the more service centers you provide, the more ballots you have to produce to be ready. Because with a service center, anybody can go anywhere. And so we don't know how many ballots to have at any particular location. So in Denver, we have 429 precincts. And so for a primary election, it's over 1,200 ballot styles at any given location. And so 1,200 ballot styles times 13 locations times how many ballots, I mean, it can be incredibly wasteful. One of the things that we did consider was ballot on demand. Ballot on demand, if done right, is the way to go, because you don't have to produce all those ballots beforehand. You produce them as you need them. We haven't come up with a ballot printer that prints our style of ballots properly yet, one that we can trust. The different vendors have different specifications, and for our particular equipment, we haven't found one yet. So we were faced with this dilemma this year in what could be a relatively low turnout election, producing, you know, 70, 80,000 ballots to be at these different locations. So what we did was we came up with a different creative solution, and that is, while we have 429 precincts times three different ballot styles, instead printed by ballot style. In other words, there's 429 precincts, but in the Democratic Party, there's only 22 different ballots that have different candidates on them. And then those different candidates, or those different styles, are then, you know, one style might have, you know, 100 precincts, another style might have 40 precincts, another style might have 26 precincts, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we've done is we've printed at every location, we've supplied the ballot styles only. And then when we issue the ballots, we will fill in by hand the precincts. Then those ballots will be reproduced once they're brought back to our location. So instead of having to produce 70 or 80,000 ballots, you know, we're only going to have maybe 10 or 20,000. And then we'll have plenty of ballots at every location. And then when they come back, we'll have to reproduce those. But we predict that there's only going to be 1,500 to 2,000 ballots even issued. So even though it's semi-wasteful that you have to, once the ballots come back to us, we have to reproduce them on the particular ballot style so that they can go through our machines, through the particular precinct. In the end, it's much less wasteful than to have 1,200 ballot styles at every location. But nonetheless, it's a problem we all face. It's this dilemma, providing service versus being wasteful at providing too much service.
Other counties want to respond?
I'll comment on that, too.
This is Nancy Doty in Arapaho.
Yes. We did look at ballot on demand. Right now, I think it's pretty expensive to do. So what we did was order extra ballots. It's weighing two different options. I mean, ballot on demand is very expensive, the initial setup cost, the equipment, and but that it's also expensive to order the extra ballots. We don't have 13, how many did you say you have?
13.
13
service centers.
We have four. We have lots of ballot styles also. We are not going to duplicate ballots, so we're going to have them marked pre-printed with the precincts on them. But again, we only have four locations to handle our many hundreds of ballot styles. But I think what's interesting for this election, we're going to be able to get some numbers. This is the first time we've had a primary for the with a mail ballot election. So next time around, we'll be able to better judge just how many ballots we need and how many people are coming in for replacements or they want to change their affiliation to whatever. So we'll know better. And so maybe we're overestimating this time. I'm hoping we'll have a better time of estimating this for future elections. So that'll be helpful.
Okay, last comment on this.
In Mesa County, we have one ballot on demand printer. It will be at the service center that's quite a ways from our elections office. So we're kind of hybrid. We have some stock and we have a ballot on demand printer. We don't have the resources to have several ballot on demand printers if we have to go to lots of locations. They also take up some room. And like I said, if this becomes a motor vehicle option that we have to have more service centers, in Mesa County, we would have to lease office space and furnish that because we don't have the space to put ballot-on-demand printers anywhere but this one location. So it's kind of hybrid for us.
I share your frustration at the cost of ballot-on-demand printers. I went up and watched Boulder County's ballot-on-demand printer, and it seemed to be just a standard HP printer, you know, this tall. And when I asked what the cost of it was, I think it was close to $8,000. It's great technology, but it's unbelievably expensive. And Nancy, I appreciate the balancing that you have to do to decide where do you go. So let's hope the technology moves and the price comes down.
I see we do have a question, if that's okay. So sure. Can you introduce yourself, say your name and organization so folks would know who you're with, and then...
Well, first, thank you to Common Cause and the panel for being here today. My name is Jesse Uliberry. I'm the director of an organization called Mi Familia Vota, or My Family Votes, and we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that works to get new American citizens engaged in the voting process. So we often work with people who are bilingual but Spanish dominant. We work with folks who are younger voters and new to the entire voting process. So I have two questions. The first is regarding language access. I want to just hear briefly from the different counties, what are you looking to do in regards to language access for the primary election, and not just about the ballots, but also talking about election judges, any type of outreach that's been done in Spanish language media, those types of things. And then I have a second question to follow up.
Okay, you want to start at the end?
Like I said before, Mesa County does not meet that criteria where we're required to do that, and we've never had anyone even ask us a question about it until today.
Okay. Are you from Mesa County?
No, I don't think so.
Jefferson County has not yet seen the demand
for those services. We are curious to see how the 2010 census comes out to see if we meet that threshold. It's certainly something we'd be willing to partner with some organizations to develop better services. We have looked at some improvements to our website to improve some of that accessibility, but again, it's we do bring in people during the election who are Spanish speaking to help with customers. Frankly, though, the demand has not been quite there yet.
Arapahoe County also does not meet the threshold for requiring Spanish ballots or other services. I fully expect that to change probably once the census is done. So we're getting geared up for that, or at least we're thinking about it, and we'll certainly comply with the requirements when it happens.
Dan, I believe it was probably 2003 or so that Denver County met the 5% threshold that is requires us to provide of the Voting Rights Act that requires us to provide all of our materials English and Spanish, and thus everything that we print in English and Spanish. Our ballots, our publications, et cetera, our website, we have a mirrored website, you know, everything in Spanish. It's a lot of work, and there's a lot of expense, but we think it's worth it, and plus we're required to do it anyway. So, I mean, we're glad to do it, frankly. And what we've done is, in addition to that, other things that we've done is we've put into ordinance, put together a group we call Acceso, and it's a Spanish language advisory group. And this group has been around now since 2007. We just got it passed through, you know, permanently in ordinance, so that even if another clerk comes along, you know, the group is there. And that group advises us on everything that we do as far as how we promote things to the Spanish language. Now, after the 2010 census, we think that we may have as many as three or maybe even four languages that we have to provide materials to. And that could be a challenge for us. And, you know, it's something that we've got to have a lot of discussions with the Secretary of State and with our legislators about how we do that. And we've got some creative ideas that we think that we can do, you know, mirroring some of the things that are done in other states. But it's a challenge that I think it's eight counties maybe that have now, and it's going to be, you know, who knows, 15, 20 counties that are going to have this challenge after 2010. One other thing I might mention is on Election Day, or not only on Election Day, but at all of our service centers, we do have bilingual judges at all of our service centers, as well as our goal is to have all of them at our polling places in November, which is around 150 polling places. So that's a challenge also, but it's one that we're glad to try to tackle.
Before Jesse goes to his next comment, I wanted to just throw in a couple of things to think about. And this is an issue that we've been working with some of our community partners on for a number of years and, you know, have urged some counties who, and it sounds like more and more counties are heading down this path, to see what they can do even if they're not required, such as providing at minimum instructions on how to vote, if not the actual ballot, and then doing some recruitment for bilingual election judges. I mean, we are one of the programs we're doing in partnership with some of the counties and some of the universities is a college poll worker recruitment program, and our focus is recruiting election judges who are voters with disabilities or have experience working in those communities, and also Spanish language voters. The one other issue that we've looked at is whether or not people can provide assistance at the polling place to do Spanish language or other language translation. And the law is currently a little bit restrictive in that realm, so that a voter can bring in one person to help them, but a community group couldn't provide volunteers to help multiple voters. The law is limiting in that sense. So that's something that we, you know, be interested in working with county clerks. And I guess I encourage the counties to work with community partners like Jesse and other groups to develop what the community needs are. But it sounds like the county clerks need to hear from all of you to see what the needs, in fact, are. Sorry, Jesse.
No problem. Just wanted to follow up on another piece. I'm excited to hear that there are some new technologies being implemented this year, like Ballot on Demand, also the Ballot Trace. Just wanted to share the information that the Latino community is the least likely of all communities to have internet access at home, but they are the highest likely group to have mobile internet access on a handheld device. So as folks move forward in looking at internet technologies and voter registration online, looking at how you can build interfaces specifically with mobile technology, Blackberries, iPhones, the full gamut of things. So this is more of a comment, I guess, than a question, but I guess I'll make it a question. What types of new technologies are your counties engaging in, and are folks exploring social networking or other new media type of opportunities to be able to outreach not only to Latino voters but young voters as well?
Great question. Janice.
Mesa County, as a county, is already on Facebook and Twitter, and so we provide information countywide, not just for elections, but anything already in that social media, and try that outreach. We're probably going to be working more with Facebook and Twitter as the election, especially the November election, gets closer, with our public information officer.
Jefferson County is also riding the social media wave. The clerk and recorder's office hasn't yet launched a Facebook or Twitter site. It's something we talked about for this year, but it fell on the list of things that hopefully we can work on for next year. I really like the ballot trace system that Denver's using, and the fact that it will proactively send messages to voters. I think that's an interesting program, and it's something we looked at also for this year. But I think you're right, absolutely. Anyway, we're going to have to all become more creative in how we get our outreach out to the voters, because if the economy continues, we may be cutting services rather than adding. And so we're going to have to, and voter education outreach, unfortunately, is one area that may need to diminish somewhat. So we need to find ways to be creative with our message and make sure we're still communicating with our voters. So it's great.
Before we take the next question?
Arapahoe County is not yet using Facebook or Twitter. It was mentioned, it's a county decision right now not to do that. So I look forward to the time when we can take part in that.
And we do have Twitter, and we tried Facebook, but we didn't feel as though it was something we may do in the future. But we do tweet, apparently. They say, Mike, you're tweeting. I'm like, okay. And, of course, ballot trace. And then one of the things we're trying to do a little bit more, too, is trying to get more email addresses in addition to the text messaging, because, you know, that's a quick way to get our message out to, if not everyone, at least, activists.
Thanks.
So my name is Daniel Gonzalez. I'm with the Colorado Civic Engagement Roundtable. So just sort of as a follow-up on the ballot trace piece, I'm just wondering sort of more of the specifics, because different subscribers that do these mass texts do and do not work with third-party carriers like Cricket, and knowing that these are some of the most vulnerable populations that kind of drop off the face of the voting world, like, could you just dig deeper into, like, who you're using or how you're populating that list?
I would have to defer to our technical people as far as that, but I can tell you this, it's a challenge, because, and that's why we didn't want to release this thing right off the bat. We conducted a beta test last November, and then again in May, learned so many things. We would send out some text messages, and we'd find out that people weren't getting them, and it was because they couldn't make it through some filters, for instance, because certain carriers wouldn't allow the messages to go through. So we had to work, as we find those problems, we have to work with those carriers to tell them, hey, this isn't spam, that sort of thing. So it's a challenge, and this is one of the things, all of us that, as election administrators, have. It's like, well, do we go out on a limb and try to do something, more than what we're required to do? Because then if we do, all of a sudden, and it doesn't go well, the press, they just love a story, the ballot trace isn't working, the messages didn't get out. And, that's a possibility, but it's a chance that we're willing to take, because it's progressive, and we think that it's a good service to our voters. But nonetheless, there are a lot of technical issues with the post office, with the carriers and with not only for text messages but for emails too, because we send these out. A person can sign up for emails and or text messages.
So I'm hearing folks out there should try to get their communities to sign up for Ballot Trace so we can continue testing this system and refining it to make sure it's serving folks. Thanks, Daniel.
Hi, I'm Elena Nunez with Common Cause. As Jenny mentioned, we have clerks and others who are listening online. I just wanted to note that we got an email from Teak Symington in Eagle County in response to Jesse's question, and noted that Eagle County's translating instructions for the primary upon request and will have full ballot translations available in Spanish for the November election that will again be distributed upon request. They have the translations also available at their polling places and assign the Spanish-speaking employees to work in the polling locations where there are more Spanish-speaking voters. And then they also do outreach in the Spanish-speaking media to get that word out as well. So one of the clerks weighed in with that answer, so just wanted to share that with folks.
Thanks.
I am Leroy Lemos. I'm the field director for Latino Initiative. In the May election, special election here in Denver, there was a candidate that provided 61 cent stamps as part of his GOTV effort. Wanted to know if Denver clerk, the Secretary of State, is taking a look at that tactic as a, is it a valid or legal? Obviously, we know that criminal charges weren't moved forward against him by the Jefferson County or Arapahoe County DA. I'm not sure who it was. That was, remember who it was. That was, it was referred to. Said it didn't rise to a criminal offense, but you know, is this a tactic that now can be utilized?
I'm going to repeat the question because some of the folks in the audience weren't able to hear. The issue goes back to earlier this year when there was a candidate in Denver County who, as part of education and outreach, had provided a 61-cent stamp with the materials that they were distributing. And a complaint was brought against it. The court came back and said it didn't rise to criminal investigation. So the question for the panelists, probably directed toward Denver and the Secretary of State, is this an issue that you're looking at and what concerns have arisen? Yeah? Okay.
I'll jump in. Thank you, Jenny. This is a situation that concerns us greatly. I would prefer if we found a way that all mail-back ballots are somehow covered and the individual doesn't have to pay for it. But since we don't have that, this is something of value. And the statute says that a candidate cannot give anything of value to a voter to induce them to vote. This, boy, it gets awfully close to the line, and we're very, very concerned about it. A little frustrated with the way that the court system handled this issue. It hasn't gotten up to the point where I'm willing to say that next year we're going to go ask the legislature for clarification, but certainly a matter of pretty deep concern in this office. So, Mike?
The only thing I would add is that, you know, it's very confusing because the law is not clear. I mean, on the one hand, it says you can't, it says that a voter shall pay postage, but it doesn't necessarily say that they can't get that postage from someone else and then pay it, you know. But at the same time, there's another section of the law that says you can't provide something of value to get someone to vote. So, you know, this is something that attorneys make a lot of money on, you know, as far as, you know, getting to court, you know, on issues like this. It's one that I know the Secretary of State's office is looking at. It's one that our legal office is looking at, and we don't have a definitive answer yet. But I will expand the issue a little bit. That is one that Denver County has advocated in the past, is that we think that if we're going to have mail ballot elections, that the counties should be required to, or at least given the option to pay that return postage. That's something that we think would be helpful. At first glance, it seems like, well, it might be expensive, but frankly, the ballots, when they come back, if someone doesn't put enough postage on their ballot, we pay for it anyway. And if they put no postage on it, we pay for it anyway.
And is that the case in all counties?
By practice or by law?
Practice.
Practice.
Yes.
And the problem with that is that it's a little bit unfair because some people are getting free postage and others aren't. And in addition to that, it's difficult for us because we don't know how much to budget. You know, if a campaign is very aggressive to publicize that, we may end up spending lots of money. You know, and so it's hard to budget. And then finally, it's difficult for us because the post office is not very good at processing ballots with the improper postage on it. They take these ballots and they literally go through them one at a time by hand, saying this one owes 42 cents, this one owes 67 cents, et cetera. And it makes it, the ballots don't get back to us in a timely fashion. If we paid all the postage up front, it would be, we'd be predictable, they'd get back to us in a timely fashion. It costs the county a little bit more money, but, you know, and I don't want to discount that that's a big issue, but it's a tough issue, but we have to weigh all the factors.
Carol.
Hi, I want to wade into the sticky wicket.
Can you please introduce yourself so folks know who you are?
I'm Carol Peoples. I work with Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition. I'm the reentry coordinator, so I work on issues of people coming out of prison in Colorado. And so I've also been working to educate people with a conviction about their voting rights. Part of that is working with jails and getting people who are eligible to vote voting out of our jails. And I worked this last presidential election with the Denver County Jail. And it was, speak up a little bit louder. Okay. It was, I realized how complicated this process can be, getting the right information to everybody about eligibility, but also getting the ballots back to people. And I know that there are a lot of jails that aren't, that may not be working with their inmates, but there are some. But I wanted to go back to just talking about the postage, because sometimes you have indigent people in there, and as you're, and I'm not sure if the jails may be putting the postage on these. So I just want to put this on your radar to be thinking about, because I'll be coming to you for some advice later on about this. I also wanted to know, do you have any advice for me, things that I should be aware of as I try to do outreach to jails to make sure that they are allowing people who are eligible to vote to vote?
Thank you. Is any panelist prepared to take questions on? See a lot of...
I would suggest that you talk to the sheriffs and see what can be done and work with them.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Definitely. But
yes,
from your perspective.
I would say...
And has anyone experienced some of the issues that Carol's raising in terms of not getting ballots or any pushback from any of your county jails or from your sheriffs, that type of thing, or broadly?
I think the biggest issue is clarity as far as what can and cannot be done. And I would encourage you to work with our communications team to make sure with the communications teams of all counties, because that's the thing. There's a bit of confusion about what is allowed and what isn't allowed, et cetera.
Jenny, I would like for Sheila Reiner from Mesa County to speak to what we do in Mesa County. She's right behind Carol.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Sheila.
I'm Sheila Reiner, Mesa County Clerk and Recorder's Chief Deputy. And I just wanted to add that we've actually already been issuing ballots to inmates when requested. So if they've done that in the past, we have. It's been less than 5 in 9 years. I can tell you that for sure. But as far as returning them to the county clerk's office, I would think about exploring whether or not the sheriff's office can, like, interoffice mail those ballots back to the clerk's office, because that's a service that the county uses all the time, at least in our county.
Great suggestion. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for everybody for being here today, and thanks to Common Cause. My name is Maria de Cambra. I'm the state director for Democracia USA. or democracy. You say we focus on making sure that Latinos are part of the American democratic process. So we do civic engagement, leadership development, and community outreach. So I really just wanted to sort of touch base on the comment that Jesse made about, you know, asking everybody about having access to other languages. I really just wanted to inform you that in my organization, our website and everything that we do is bilingual. And we notice that when we do have bilingual materials, that the community understands it in their own language and they feel more comfortable asking the questions that they probably wouldn't ask if they didn't understand the language. But I wanted to ask a question from Mesa County. I know you mentioned that you have a Citizens Elections Review Committee, mm-hmm. and I wondered if you have any minority groups. I know you mentioned disability and the parties, but I wonder who else is part of your committee.
We invite the parties to select the members for the Citizens Review. We do not select those ourselves. We also invite the League of Women Voters to select members to come to that as well. And then we ask the Legal Center for members from the disability community to participate. We publicize it, so we open it up to anyone that wants to come. But we struggle just getting, you know, 10 or 12 people to participate in this because it's voluntary. And they have several meetings with us before and after each election. So we're not closed to anyone that wants to participate, but we do struggle and we beg them almost to come and be a part of it.
And just a comment, Univision and Intravision Communications are so easy to talk to and they're great of helping do any community education. Just putting it out there. Oh, and Jefferson County will be doing some work in your county this year so we can talk. So.
Excellent.
Great.
Okay, I'm going to encourage our listening audience and any members of the room to ask additional questions. I've got a bunch of questions myself. You wouldn't be surprised. One of my questions, as we think about the service center model and a vote by mail election, I just had the fortune of, you know, I'm part of Denver has an advisory group, and they, you know, on occasion do a presentation, and one of the issues I think that was presented, and sorry Mike to put you on the spot, you might remember off the top of your head, was how many, and I guess my question for the panel and anyone else in the audience is, how many voters tend to drop off their ballots rather than mail them in? Because I understand that to be a very popular way for voters to return their ballot. There's sort of this comfort of seeing it go into that ballot box or handing it over to a human being rather than trusting the mail. So can you talk about that if you know some of the statistics or even just a general response?
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, in Denver, we provided the opportunity. I'll use the 2008 election year. We provided the opportunity for people to drop off their ballots, not only at our service centers, but at all of our 185 polling places. And that was very popular. Of our 177,000 voters that voted by mail, 93,000 dropped them off in person. So more than half dropped off in person. And so that told us they didn't trust the mail, or they wanted to see that ballot go into a ballot box. So that's why we were big proponents of, I think it was 1186, that required counties to put ballot boxes at polling places. Now, for this particular election, we'll have the 13 locations. I'm a proponent, and this is something we haven't formally done, but I think it's something that the state should look at, and that is something that other mail ballot jurisdictions have done, and that is standalone boxes that are there 24/7. We don't have to man them, et cetera. I mean, it's a little bit controversial, and it's something, but nonetheless, we should be thinking outside the box and trying to make things easier for the voter, and that's something we should look at too.
Or inside the box.
Yeah.
That's the case, maybe.
Yeah. Sorry. Another thing that we've done that I think should be considered, you know, is the drive-through drop-off. Of our 13 locations, we had one drive-through drop-off, and that was absolutely—it was incredibly popular. People driving by, dropping their box, and I know several counties do that. And we've increased ours from this year. We're going to have not one, but five locations where there's actually drive-through drop-offs.
Other counties?
The primary.
other counties to talk a little bit about ballot drop-off versus return by mail?
Mesa County only sees about one-third of its voters drop ballots off, so I don't think that it's a one-size-fits-all. When one county is a proponent of something, it might not work in another county, and we see more mail them in than drop them off.
Jefferson County would echo that. The vast majority of our ballots that we get back are actually through the mail. Now, as we get closer to Election Day, I think we get higher volumes at our drop-off locations. But by and large, what we see is through the mail. And Mike mentioned the drive-through drop-off locations. For those counties not doing it, I highly recommend it. And if there's any way you can get on one of those drive-through drop-off crews, that's the best job in elections. Because everybody that drives through is happy to see you, happy to hand their ballot through the car window and get on with their day. So it's a great service and something we're happy to provide. We have our drop-off locations are fairly busy, but we don't typically see the volume we do through the mail.
Okay, Arapahoe County, we have not tracked the actual percentages of people who mail them back versus dropping them off. We are going to do that this year, so we'll have better information. I think before we require every county to do something, we need more information rather than just going for it without documentation. We did have three drive-through locations, and just for information, we have 14 drop-off locations. And three of those we had drive-through. Very popular. We had one incident, though, where the gentleman accepting the ballots put his foot out there and it got run over. So you have to, you know, there's a certain amount of liability with this, too. He promised that will not happen again but this election. But we have lines of cars coming through, so it's very, very popular. And we will do it again.
And one more thing. I just wanted to add, this is Josh from Jefferson County again. I think it's important that regardless of what direction the state of Colorado goes, to recognize that all the county clerks out there see that not one size fits all. Things that apply in Mesa or Arapahoe or Denver may not apply in Jeffco and vice versa, but we all realize that not every voter is going to want to put a stamp on their envelope and put their ballot in the mail, which is why we have and will continue to provide drop-off locations. We try to locate them throughout the county in the way that's most spread demographically and throughout the county. Geographically is what I'm looking for, excuse me. But we realize that one size doesn't fit all. Some people may want to just throw a stamp on it and forget it. Others may want to actually drop it off and still get that experience of casting their ballot in the polling place. And so,
you know, I think this is an issue, obviously. You know, I've been working on elections in Colorado directly for this program since 2004, and this has been an ongoing issue, the question of consistency amongst the counties. And certainly since the passage of the Help America Vote Act in 2002 and the centralization of election law in our Secretary of State's office has driven a lot of that. But there is always this question, and I think Colorado has this history. I mean, and we often say, I mean, we have 64 elections every time we have an election in the state of Colorado, which, you know, I guess has its benefits because we're meeting the needs of the community within that specific county, but it certainly has its challenges for the political parties or for civic engagement groups who are working across counties, for the media in terms of how to communicate to voters about what their rights are and what the rules are. So I sort of invite a little more comment on this issue, and I'm curious as to what you all think about where we are currently and where you think we might be headed in the future.
Well, I would like to comment on some of those issues, specifically vote centers. It works for some counties, but for Arapahoe County, it never would work because, first of all, we got a lot of precincts. Our county is very broad, 70 miles, and to have paper ballots at all of the, I calculate about 60 to 65 vote centers for Arapahoe County. If we were to go that route, it would be so expensive. And that's why I like my DREs, because we can program those for any voter, and it doesn't cost any more for one voter to vote on it versus 2,000. So that's one issue, I think, that needs to be considered. And I firmly believe that the local community best knows how to have an election for their community. And that's why the clerks should have the option, I strongly feel, to conduct elections that best suits their needs and the community's needs and the voters. We know our voters. And I've done surveys. You know, are the voters happy? They're very happy with our electronic equipment. I think our voters would not be happy having to have paper ballots at all the locations. They like what they've had so far.
Yes. Yeah, Mesa County vote centers work quite successfully for Mesa County. We are all electronic, but we do have the voter verifiable paper. And because we invite so much involvement from our citizens, they're very happy with that. And like Arapahoe County, I don't think that they want us to go backwards in time. And I think they'd be disappointed in that.
What you'll see throughout the country is a wide range of approaches, especially when the Help America Vote Act came out in 2002, and there was money available, federal money available. And, you know, some states decided, hey, we're going to centralize, we're going to run the show. I mean, for instance, in Oklahoma or in Rhode Island, for instance, they do all the ballots, they print the ballots, they distribute them, they have one vendor with one type of equipment. And then on the other end of the spectrum is a county or a state like Colorado that it's kind of a free-for-all. And to a certain extent, I can see the advantages of both. I agree with the other panelists. You know, the county clerks know their counties, and they know what works best for them. So it's a tough question. The way I come down on it is that, you know, the state should provide minimum guidelines, and if counties want to do more than that, then it's even that much more service to the voter. But at the same time, you won't have a county then that is cheating the voter, and so that's kind of the proper role, I guess, I would see the state playing. In addition to that, if we do move towards mail ballot elections, I think it makes sense to explore having the state provide more guidelines as far as what vendors are available, should we be using a single vendor, that sort of thing. You know, long term. Short term, we've got equipment now. We've all got equipment we want to use and get our money's worth out of. But long term, I think it's something that we should explore, whether or not we want to have more centralization. But I think there's always that fine balance. I mean, I don't think any election administrator wants to be dictated to every little aspect of their election, because that's difficult for the state to do in an efficient manner.
So, Mr. Secretary, we've been talking a little bit about the reality that that we have 64 different elections every time we hold an election in Colorado. Then add on to that special district and municipal elections. We'll put that aside. And then the increasingly move to centralization since the passage of the Help America Vote Act, and the role of the state, Secretary of State's office, in either providing minimum guidance to provide some consistency. I don't know if you want to jump in.
I'll leave the room for 2 minutes and you got to bring up the toughest issue.
You don't know how any of this
is. and you know, let me just say that I've been trying to move the discussion in a little bit different direction. I mean, the ends of the discussion are autonomy or standardization. And I've been trying to move the discussion towards what best practices are. And I think that's a place where we can bridge this discussion. And as I've gone around the counties, I mean, you see some interesting variations. I'll just mention one. When the counties receive the ballots in, they bundle them into bunches for processing. Nancy, I think you do 50. Adams County does 25s, and Boulder does 100s. I'm not going to say any one of those is wrong. It sets up a different process if there is a problem ballot. You know, how hard is it to find it? Adams County, because they've had a lot of recounts, and the recount process goes towards bundles of 25, they start out there. Now, that's an interesting discussion, and I don't think that's necessary for the state to mandate what works, but it's really instructive for me to visit the counties and see that there are different things and to make sure that everybody is having a good conversation. So my observation is that there is far more similarity than there is variance between the way the counties do this. Really, I mean, the processes are very, very, very similar, and there's variances on the edges. And so we should have discussion about those variances and try to figure out what the best practice is.
Thank you.
Hello again. I've got two questions that came in over email. The first is, what does someone do if they know that they're registered but don't actually get a ballot?
Call us right away. Get in touch with their county clerk and recorder.
And then the other question has to do with vote centers or drop-off locations around college and university campuses, and if the counties are making plans specifically to target those populations, and then if not, are there coordination efforts to try to make sure that students do return those ballots?
In November, Mesa County will be holding vote centers, and one of the vote centers will be at Mesa State College. And I think the requirement now is to have a ballot box at each vote center, so I think we've certainly got that covered.
Jenny's pointing at me.
Oh, sorry.
She knows we just met a few days about this very subject. You know, we had a group come to us asking us to put a vote center at the Auraria campus, and we'd love to. But then we put one at Auraria, then we have to do one at DU, then we have to do one at Regis, and all of a sudden our plan of having 13 centers with you know, having the proper geographic spacing goes out the window. And so what we're looking, so we will not have one at the Auraria campus, but we've got a location less than a mile away.
And we also had, I thought, a very productive conversation, again, going back to how community groups can work with election administrators to meet those needs, because there are cost concerns, and because the electorate is constantly changing. And I think the more sort of the civic engagement groups get organized, which I think we are increasingly doing so, we have a real opportunity to be advocates for our constituents, and reach out and work with the election administrators and say, okay, well, if we don't have the money in our state, which we don't, to do all that we want to do, what can we do as a community to partner and make sure that we are doing as much as we can to enfranchise the folks who are not traditionally enfranchised? And I think that's where you'll see a lot of the civic engagement work is focusing on that 7% in Jefferson County, the, you know, 48% in Mesa County, those voters who are still doing it the old way or not yet engaged and following sort of some of the new ideas and need that sort of guiding hand. And I think Maria said it really well. I mean, when you speak the language of the voter, they're going to feel more comfortable asking for help when they don't get that ballot. If the voter doesn't know that that opportunity is there, that there is a friendly voice at the other end of the line, they may not make that call in the first place. So I think there really is an opportunity for partnership, which is why one of the reasons we really appreciate you all being here today. Now, I know that there are some county clerks out there in the audience, and maybe I could invite you up to make a comment or two.
I'm Ann Edens from Delta County, and our voters are very comfortable with the mail ballot concept because we've been doing mail ballots in the odd years since 1993. And also, we end up conducting municipal elections for three municipalities, and they're all mail. So the people are used to mail. In fact, we've had people that have argued with us, you always send my ballot to me in the mail when we have a polling place election. And we had a notice in the paper, a couple of articles in the paper, and a notice on our website about hearing for the doing the primary by mail. We had zero comments. Nobody came to our meeting. So people weren't very interested.
We're working on that.
But so they were comfortable with the mail ballot.
Just to repeat some of the comments that Ann has been talking about for Delta County is that I'll just speak on. Correct me if I misstate, that mail balloting is very popular, that the constituents out there have come to expect their ballots to be delivered, have done notice for comments and encourage participation, but haven't seen the voters show up.
And we have about 62% permanent mail right now, and we will be doing a mailing after the primary also to the people that are not permanent.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bring up another issue?
Yes.
Something that I think is interesting that's worth discussing. And as we move to mail ballots, you know, we tend to talk about the front end, you know, what we're doing, our interactions with the voter. But what we haven't touched on, which is equally important, is what we do on the back end. What do we do? How do we process those ballots? And you know, when I came here in 2007, I remember coming from Omaha, Nebraska, and coming to Denver, thinking, "Wow, this is going to be a really great facility." You know, and I walked into that facility, and I thought, "Oh my God, it was horrible. It was a tiny little location. We could never run an election here." Well, nonetheless, 2 months later, we had to run a mail ballot election, and we filled the place to capacity with workers, and the ballots came in, and we kept working. Our people got tired, they went home, we brought our backup crew in, we kept working, we couldn't get done in the media's mind in a timely fashion. And there was nothing we could do about it because, you know, there's certain restrictions as far as your location, you know, cameras, et cetera, et cetera. And so we eventually moved to a new location, and now we've actually moved to another new location since then, a beautiful facility now. But it's got tons of capacity, capacity for a regular election and capacity to grow for a mail ballot election. And that's an issue because mail ballot election, I mean, you roughly get about 1/3 of your ballots in on election day. And so you have this huge rush. And it's something that we all have to consider, and the public has to be aware of, that you have to be ready for that, or you have to either give us the facility and the resources to process these ballots to get done by, you know, 2-3 in the morning, or you have to change your expectations on when results come. You know, we may be processing all the next day. I mean, that may be the case in other counties that aren't as fortunate as we are in Denver to have a brand new facility that has the capacity. So it's an issue that needs to be, people need to be aware of. I mean, it's not always, you know, there's pluses and there's minuses. Now, I'm not trying to make a statement one way or the other. It's just, it's an is.
I agree. I think the electorate has to, well, it's really the media who has to get a handle, and the political parties, on the reality is that better to have an accurate count than a fast count. And sometimes it does take time. At Common Cause, we've certainly supported that position. But you know, I don't see all of our political party folk here. They want those returns, and that's where I'm sure you're getting a lot of the pressure. I don't know if anyone else wants to comment on that issue before we go to the next one.
I would like to comment on that from Mesa County's standpoint. When I listen to the legislature and when they are passing new election legislation, they're quick to tell you on the floor. They don't care when the results come in. They want them to be accurate, but they have a very short memory by election night. when the expectation is for them to be there. I think Election Day now is voting, and results might be 2 or 3 days later. And I agree with Mike that that has to get out there, because the more challenges that are put on an election, the harder it's going to be to meet the expectations of the media and the candidates.
Well, and I think forums like this and getting a lot of community groups together like this and counties together and is a great opportunity for us to spread the message that I know in 2008 we were trying to spread the message that get your ballot in as quickly as you can. Get it in early. It'll help the count. I know there are various reasons why people want to hold on to their ballots later, but the fact of the matter is if we get a bulk of the ballots on Election Day, we have to count them on Election Day and into Election Night, so set expectations accordingly. It should be an interesting dynamic this year with several counties accepting ballots in the polling place for the general election, accepting mail-in ballots on Election Day. I think there can be possible issues with parking. Voters who have already voted their mail-in ballot possibly taking parking from voters who have not yet cast a ballot at the polling place. I think we may have issues with distribution of ballots from the polling places back to our central count locations on Election Day. So those are all things that are going to be new in several counties this year. But in setting those expectations, that I think election night is no longer a, finished counting in the bar by midnight sort of event anymore. You know, it's a several day event, and Election Day is just one day in what is now a several months worth of an election.
It takes 3 or 4 weeks that the voting period goes. You would think that folks could handle it, but you've got my support. I don't know that that's going to be enough, though. Jesse?
Once again, Jesse Uliberry, State Director for Mi Familia Vota, My Family Votes. Quick question regarding permanent vote by mail. I've heard recent information regarding the permanent vote by mail list and that tens of thousands of folks have moved since registering as permanent vote by mail. Some of those folks have moved within the same county. I'd like to hear what each county's plan is to address those folks who may be registered to permanently vote by mail, who don't receive a ballot, or what they can do to negotiate those lines. I think folks figure permanent means permanent for life, but I think we all know that you always have to update your voter registration. But I don't know if that's widely communicated among the public. So wanting to know what the plans are for each county to address those folks who are on the permanent vote by mail list but who have moved, and then also connecting that to the issue of the National Change of Address Registry and how do we start to make the ties easier for voters if they're changing their address. How do we start to streamline that process so folks can have their voter registration follow them as they move within their counties and out of other counties?
Thanks, Jesse. Does anyone want to start?
You know, I'm going to ask Judd Choate to come up and talk a little bit about the efforts of the Pew Charitable Trust and the registration efforts that they're pushing, and Colorado is one of 10 states that's participating in it, because I think it's relevant to this.
Thank you.
So there's a group called the Pew Charitable Trust, which
introduce yourself.
Oh, okay. My name is Judd Choate. I'm Director of Elections for the state of Colorado. I work for Secretary Buescher. The Pew Charitable Trust has a group called the Pew Center for the States, which has a whole series of different objectives for improving the way that states do their business, and one in particular that they're interested in is elections. With regard to that, one of their big programs right now is to improve the way that we collect information or streamline and consolidate the way we collect information about potential voters, about our citizenry. If you think about it, right now the way someone becomes registered is that they act. So they have to do some action which produces their registration. The Pew idea is that we have enough information about the people that legally live within a jurisdiction that we should be able to ping them and ask them, do you want to be registered? And so it reverses the process so as to encourage people who are not registered presently to go ahead and get registered. We're a part of this working group that's been working on this project. It started out as a whole bunch of election officials from around the country kind of talking about the problems this would present, the hurdles that would be created, how you would overcome that and get to some sort of system by which you could easily dispense this information and collect it back for the states to use. We're now down to about 10 states or so who are ready to sign on the dotted line, are interested in actually participating in this process. And in practice, what it would be is we have a voter registration system, what we call in the state of Colorado SCORE. What we would do is work with the Pew system, which is called ERIC. We would provide our data to ERIC, and ERIC would consolidate data from across many states, not only the 10 participating states, but the data that could be collected from other states. And you would be able to see when someone moved from one state to another. So let's say in the state of Colorado, we have a lot of snowbirds who have a residence in Aspen or Vail or, you know, Eagle County or Pitkin County or somewhere around in the mountains. And then, but they actually live in Phoenix, Arizona, or they live somewhere else in the United States. Their primary residence is where they should be voting, and their secondary residence is probably not where they should be voting unless it's a special district and they have some property interest in that. What this database would allow us to do is understand what's happening in other states and understand where data or where someone maybe lives in another state, they're collecting a ballot in that state, they're voting in that state. We would be able to know whether or not, well, whether they can legally vote in our state. And then so that's one way you can use it. And then from another perspective is we can collect information about people who are potential residents, who are registrants, who are not yet registered. And we could send them a card. We could send them a postcard like we do a VIC for voters to verify address. And what we would do is say, hey, we recognize that you hit all of the criteria to be a registered voter, but you're not registered. We'd sure like for you to be registered if you'd like to be. Here is our website that you can go to and register and fill in the information necessary to do that. It also allows us to track people when they move. If turns out voter registration is not the first thing people think about when they move from one address to another, and in fact we have come in these conversations to realize that, in fact, a lot of voters believe that when you tell the post office that you moved and to change your address, that they believe that you've also informed them about your voter registration. Well, of course, we don't converse with the post office as to, you know, the addresses of or changed addresses for people that are moving in-state or out-of-state or just down the street. We need them to ping us directly. This would allow us to understand when people are moving, and when we had enough data to indicate that someone doesn't live at the address that they previously had used as their voting address, we can then go to them and say, it looks to us like you've moved down the street or you've moved to another county. Is that the case? And if it is, here's the website you go to where you can change your address so as to receive your voter information at a different address. So I think this is where the world is going. We hope it's the way that the world's going. And it's a way to collect and consolidate this kind of information so as to ease this transition from one voter registration to another. Because the problem that we currently experience is that a person may not know that they needed to change registration, and because of that, they don't qualify to vote the full ballot when they actually do determine that they need to re-register. Or we run into a problem where we have multiple registrations in multiple districts, and we have to figure out a way to consolidate that information into our voter registration database so that we don't have two people that are the same person in multiple counties that could conceivably, if things worked out right, vote in multiple counties on a given election day. So that's something that we're working on, and I think it's got a lot of good attributes, both to be able to bring in new registrants, to clean up our data, and to try to identify movers within our database. So anyway, that's a project we're working on right now.
Thank you, Judd. That's quite a lot to consider, a project we're actually very excited about. But before I get some responses to what I think will be a pretty interesting topic, I want to thank Clerk Doty. I know that she has to be excused a little bit early for another appointment. So I just want to thank you for participating and invite you if you have any closing remarks or anything else to add.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll go Sheila and then Mike. Are you on the same topic as what Judd has brought up?
Well, sort of. I'm just going to speak to what currently happens when we find out a voter has moved and how we handle that with the confirmation card process.
Okay. Kind of sure. Yeah. Okay. Come on, Sheila.
Sheila Reiner, Mesa County, Mesa County's Clerk and Recorder's Chief Deputy. I just wanted to speak to this a little bit in that currently what happens is each county does multiple mailings per year. And it could be a countywide mailing for us to just get the word out about, for instance, the primary being by mail, or it could be a voter information card. We recently did an unaffiliated mailing that provided us a lot of data. When those cards or that mailing goes to a voter, they're not forwardable, just like a ballot. So that card comes back to us, and we put it in our system that it was undeliverable mail. That automatically generates a confirmation card that goes out to the voter that's forwardable now and asks them if they would like to update their registration. So I just wanted to note that there is already a process sort of in place, and a lot of the counties that do smaller elections in the off seasons for their municipalities and special districts also enjoy a benefit from that because we get undeliverable ballots from those elections as well and then can get to that voter before the next big one. That was it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to agree with Judd regarding the long-term goal, I think, of the state. I mean, I think we should be moving towards universal or automatic or whatever. There's several names out there of registration. Blending databases with other states, I mean, I think it's a noble goal for long term. I also think that there's a short term goal that we should, as a state, be considering if we're moving towards mail ballot elections. And it specifically, you know, addresses the concern that was brought up about, you know, PMIV, you know, people on that permanent list. That's just one of many issues regarding the existing laws we have right now, which I feel are antiquated, frankly, that need to catch up with, you know, that need modernization if we're going to go to mail ballot elections. For instance, you know, we had 192,000 people on our permanent list, and 10,000 of them didn't vote in the 2008 election. Now they think they're on this list, and because they didn't vote, they're not. And so the next, you know, the general election this year, they think that the ballot's going to be coming, but it won't be. And so that's something, and the reason for that, and one of the reasons, I guess, is that in Colorado, I think we have a very restrictive law when it comes to inactive voters. Throughout the country, you have some states where you can go 20 years and never vote, and you're still a registered voter. And then you have on the other extreme a state like Colorado where you go one election and you don't vote and you become inactive. And when you become inactive, you run the risk of, under previous law, of not getting a ballot in a mail ballot election.
And under current law, except in the primary and in the just recently passed 2009 election. So current law is really problematic from our view, that in the 2011 election cycle, all inactive voters would not receive a mail ballot. And
right.
We know from history in Colorado that the large majority of our counties will be doing a vote-by-mail election in 2011.
Right. So it's the issue.
Do you have a clarification? We don't mail to inactive fail to vote except for in the primary and in the 2009 election. The legislature was very narrow when they made that change in 2008. It only applied to the 2009 election. So there's a huge gap that really must be addressed next legislative session.
That was one of the protections that we put into the primary ballot, mail ballot law. So that
right. So for the primary.
inactive failed votes.
That's correct.
But the real issue is it's a twofold issue. Number one, it's a one of fairness to the voter. I mean, why should a voter be penalized for not voting? And then in addition to that, it's a question of efficiency. Why should election administrators have to spend all this money putting people on and taking them off, putting them on, taking them off the voter rolls? It's very, very inefficient. And I think that, you know, I'm hoping that the Best Practices and Vision Committee takes this issue very seriously, because Colorado is on the very extreme. They are the most extreme state in the country as far as restricting voter access to the ballot when it comes to inactivating voters. So that's just one of many legal issues of reforms, I think, that need to be considered. In addition to that, we mentioned the use of NCOA and proper list maintenance. I think that we, you know, have very restrictive laws in not being able to use NCOA. You know, when a voter fills out an NCOA form, it says, you know, this can be used for voter registration purposes, and that's what they see from the U.S. Post Office, yet Colorado doesn't take advantage of that. We're prevented from moving a voter when they fill out an NCOA card. And that's just something that's just one of many, many different pieces that we should be reforming if we are going to move to mail ballot elections.
This is a hot topic. I wanted to, just for the record, also say that voters who have moved and didn't receive a ballot should absolutely contact their county clerk, but also can utilize a service center, and will be able to go under this new structure and receive a replacement ballot, update their registration, whatever action needs to take place. If they are an eligible voter, they can get a newer replacement ballot or a provisional ballot, depending on the voter situation. Yeah. Any other comments from the panelists before we go to our next question?
My name is Margaret Johansson. I'm with Coloradans for Voting Integrity. And one of our main goals is to have secure elections. And in a lot of ways, mail ballots are challenging our usual protections that we have built in to the system. And I just wondered if the clerks thought about that and tried to overcome some of the problems with chain of custody and third parties who are unrelated to the voter being able to pick up ballots and all that kind of thing.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
So the question really speaks to chain of custody. This is an issue that I think is addressed in some of the rules and regulations, and other security issues with the sort of change of hands of ballots by the time they leave the voter who signs the ballot until it gets to the county clerk. Thank you.
Thank you. It could be argued in several ways that mail ballot has some securities that polling place ballot does not. I will speak to some of the securities in place for mail ballots. There are chain of custody logs from the drop-off locations and service centers to the central counting facility. Under Secretary of State election rule, any of our counting facilities are also under constant video surveillance, chain of custody logs, access logs, various security systems in place to make sure that our central location is secure. And one thing that we've talked about a little bit, but not in full detail, is the level of scrutiny that goes into signature verification. That every voted ballot envelope has a signature on it from the voter, and that is checked against our database. If it doesn't, there are procedures in place for getting in contact with that voter, giving them time now up to 8 days after the election to cure that, come in, sign that, and verify that signature. If it doesn't match, we also get in contact with the voter, ask them to verify that it's their ballot. So there are steps in place now, and I think this is one of the reasons I think we're having more discussions about mail ballot now, is because of some of the things that weren't in place. I know, was it 2004, I think, there was a vote
was it 04 or 02? There was a statewide initiative or referendum about mail ballot.
Yes.
And I've heard that referred to a lot, but there's a lot of things in place that weren't in place back then. There's a lot of security in place that wasn't there now. So in terms of security, I feel mail ballot elections are actually very, very secure. Janice, did you want to?
While they're discussing it, I will encourage Margaret and others who are listening, you know, through our college poll worker program that Common Cause has been working on, we had our college students take a tour of Denver's facility and sort of walk through all of the processes in place. And I'm confident that the other counties would be open to such a tour to walk through. Well, what are the steps that the counties have in place, whether it's during the election or, you know, otherwise, to make sure that the voters are confident. Again, I think that's really a big part of our work is bridging together, you know, community interests who are concerned about the integrity of our elections. I mean, we all know since 2000, sort of Pandora's box was opened with our elections, and it wasn't always very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
So concerns have been raised, and the confidence of the electorate really has been shaken. We have really found that bringing the community and those who run our elections together can alleviate a lot of those concerns. And when there are problems, we can start making some changes. We are getting to the top of our second hour. So I want to invite sort of closing remarks and really just take a quick minute to thank all of you who have come today and participated in the program. You know, I work with a lot of colleagues who are doing a lot of fiscal reform stuff, and they're total geeks when it comes to the fiscal reform issues, and no one wants to hear all that, but I completely geek out with my friends on the election stuff, and it can get really technical really fast, so I really appreciate people having the interest and their willingness to delve into these details, because every detail, whether it's an NCOA check or, you know, checking a signature on the ballot, really impacts whether or not the ballot's actually going to count, and whether or not folks feel enfranchised or disenfranchised, whether or not we have confidence in the outcome of our elections or not. So every detail really does matter. So I really appreciate everyone taking the time, certainly our panelists and the secretary for co-hosting, and just invite any closing remarks from anyone else at the table as we wrap up our afternoon.
This is Mike from Denver again for those online. I just make one quick comment regarding that last issue. In 2008, one of our of the issues that we had with mail ballot elections, security wasn't one of them. We feel confident in the procedures that are in place that mail ballot elections are secure. We think there should be some tweaking and a little more standardization as far as how we, you know, look at signatures and maybe provide some standardized training on things like that, but nothing major. We're pretty happy with that. As far as my closing remarks, I got to tell you, when I first came to Colorado on my first day, Stephanie O'Malley said, "Well, we're going to the press conference." I said, "Press conference? I'm just an elections director." And she said, "Well, we're having a press conference." And I walk into the room, and there's five TV stations there. And then after that, we had an elections model advisory committee, which Jenny sits on. And we had 26 members of the public participating on that committee. And I was absolutely floored in both of those instances by the public participation in elections and the interest in elections here. And I'm just I can't say enough about how great that is and what a great feeling is to know that the public is so interested. So while I think that we have many challenges and many a long way to go in election reform and modernizing our laws, et cetera, I'm very confident that with the help of the public that we'll get there. And I'm very pleased to work with all of you in doing that, as well as my colleagues from the other counties and the Secretary of State's office.
Thank you.
This is Josh Liss from Jefferson County again. I also want to thank Secretary Buescher and Jenny and Colorado Common Cause for putting this together. I think it's forums like this, opportunities to partner with our local community groups and citizens that help us become truly better at what we do.
There's been, we'll look over the past decade, Jefferson County's gone from punch cards to all electronic voting to hybrid system to putting paper ballots right back in the polls. There's been the last few years a lot of talk about the modernization of elections or what the next steps are, what our next model is. And I hope that our groups, our community groups, our elected officials, and our friends under the dome will continue to work together with the county clerks and the election administrators in trying to find whatever it is that next elections thing is, find a long-term solution, one that provides consistency for our voters and some level of wise long-term investment so that we can truly, people know what to expect, and we know what to provide. I think a few years ago we had some discussions about voting systems. I don't think those discussions are over because our systems are getting older. And the question is, what do we do next? And I think the answer to that question is part of that long-term solution that I hope we can all work together to provide. So thank you again for doing this, and thanks to the other panel members.
Janice Rich from Mesa County. I want to thank Secretary Buescher and Common Cause for holding this, and for everyone that came out and are interested in elections. I'm in my final year as a county clerk in Mesa County, and it's been a privilege to work with election staff like Mesa County has, and I'm sure every county clerk feels that way in their own county. And it amazes me, with all of the challenges of elections, how election staffs can just make magic. And maybe we've been our worst enemy in that every time there's a new challenge, somehow we make that happen. And I applaud the election staffs around this state. And I look forward to a new county clerk in Mesa County coming up with new and innovative ideas for future elections and having a voice in that process. And thank you very much.
Jenny, thank you. Thank you to the clerks. I've only been doing this for 18 months. I consider myself still to be a rookie. But there are some things that are just absolutely fascinating. I think the area of election law is fascinating. And, Mike, you made an articulate statement for fixing some of the things that are broken in our election laws. And I also hear good friends telling me we need a time of stability. And it is that balance, that teeter-totter almost, that I try to figure out, how do we deal with those things in our statutes that don't work, and at the same time not put too much on the county clerks? Because at the end of the day, the county clerks run the elections, and they do a great job. I mean, it really is extraordinary. The amount of work, the amount of effort, and the amount of personal integrity that goes into our state elections. I'm looking forward to working on these issues, and hopefully we can make things a little easier and a little better for the citizens of the state, and maybe even also for the clerks. And I want to thank everyone who came and contributed to this discussion, because this is the fundamentals and the foundation of our form of government. So thank you again, Jenny.
Thank you. That's all. Have a good evening.